back to the roundtable on a Wednesday morning. 9:14 is the time. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Thank you, Mike Bowen, for the Freddie Hubbard this morning as the bumper music. Oh, that's so nice. It's the roundtable panel here, and we'll drag it on a bit because one of our panelists is not yet in the building. First, we welcome Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith. Good morning, Jen.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm well.
I'm good. You awake and with us?
I am. It's a true story. Ace. I was on vacation last week.
Oh,
so
where'd you go?
I went to the Cape.
Nice.
Yep. Ace reporter she is. Not only that, she has a front page story, right? Today is the front page? I think it is. Yeah.
How was the Cape?
It was beautiful weather. Yeah. I caught my 30-inch striper. I'm happy. Yeah,
did
you
they
bet.
Clean it for you? Did you have it?
Oh, yeah. My uncle's a charter boat captain.
Oh, that'll save money. Yep. That can be a little expensive. So good for you.
Sharks, though.
Also here with us is Alan Shartok. Good morning, Alan. How's the old back?
Sore subject.
Also, I like it.
See what I did there?
Also here with us, just walked in, it's communications consultant Joe Bonilla. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Ray.
What's with the late arrival?
You know, as a true person of the communications arts, you know, you have to be right here exactly on time.
Well, actually, you were a few minutes
late. Well, that's according to your clock.
No, if you didn't mention it, no one would have known.
Ray.
We used to have this guy who worked here.
Ray.
He would wait outside the building until his shift came on. Until everybody in the place was scared to death.
Yeah.
He was a classical music guy.
And, oh, that's great.
And then he would walk in at the last moment, and everybody would breathe a sigh of relief. So you are getting to be a professional.
Oh, good. Good for you, Joe. Also here, and she's in a great mood today.
And always early for everything.
Yeah.
Thank
like
you,
that.
Mama.
That's good. former regional administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, Judith Enck, is here. And Judith, you're in a good mood today.
A rare good mood. Yeah.
Why is that?
Because a few nights ago, the Albany County Legislature passed a polystyrene ban for food packaging. They deserve a lot of credit. It was heavily opposed by the chemical industry. They've been at it for 3 years, and it was a really amazing grassroots victory with average citizens being informed and taking action on what's a really, really important issue. But we're not out of the woods. The bill now goes to County Executive Dan McCoy, who needs to decide whether to sign or veto the bill. I really hope he will sign it. He signed another version of it a few years ago.
In 2014. That was for restaurants.
That was for large, like, chain restaurants.
Yep.
So this will now extend it. And, you know, what I told the legislature is this is such a big global issue. Scientists say that in the next few years, for every 3 pounds of fish in the ocean, there will be 1 pound of plastic.
Wow.
Listen to that one.
And this is basically plastic.
Polystyrene is plastic. It's non-recyclable, even though it has the recycling arrows on it. And even though the chemical industry says, wait, let us recycle it. But it's pretty impossible in a practical way to recycle it. So it's a big environmental victory, and we really need the county executive to sign this.
Well, I want to ask, I'm sorry, Joe, but I wanted to ask you something, Judith, if I can, as our expert, and that is, assuming you get rid of the straws and the bags and the
bottles
bottles and the poly, then the question
polystyrene.
And,
well done,
and you get rid of all of that. Then what do we get down to? We get down to paper, right? It has to be paper.
Either reusable products, like you have your coffee this morning in a wonderful reusable WAMC mug.
Which is made of uranium, oddly enough. Did you know that? Very nice.
Yours has a little sprinkle of lead in it, right?
Yes, indeed.
So
keeps me sharp.
Reusable products or paper-based or bio-based products. There's a company up in Green Island called Ecovative Design. Very successful. A group of RPI students launched it out of the RPI incubator, and they make an alternative to polystyrene from mushrooms and agricultural waste. So this is going to force innovation. And many restaurants have stopped using polystyrene. They, you know, first you can like maybe have smaller portions and not have to go at all of these restaurants, you know, just like eat your dinner peacefully and happily with your family, not looking at your phone during the whole meal, and then you can.
Boy, you are on the old soapbox today.
Yeah. All right. Isn't it? Haven't you noticed though in restaurants the number of people sitting there just looking at their screens?
Yep, the glaze.
Not,
yes,
not
I hate it when people do that.
You do it all the time, don't you?
Without question. No.
Yeah, and you're right. I have to get off the soapbox, but there are alternatives to polystyrene. There will be innovation, and this is just the beginning. There's a lot more single-use plastic packaging that needs to be addressed.
Okay, so we live in a big world, right? And the Albany legislature is just one sort of dot, Real McCoy aside. And so what about the rest of the world?
Well, New York City passed this very bill. It was challenged by the industry. It survived legal challenge. So January 1st, New York City will have banned polystyrene, a community of 8 million people. So we just go one by one, and I hope the Albany County action will prompt Saratoga County, Rensselaer County, nearby counties to do the same thing.
As I understand this bill, this move this week, it does not affect stores. In other words, you can if you want a styrofoam cup, and I don't know why you would. They're not very effective, and they're flimsy, and they don't
leach
work.
Chemicals if the food is hot.
Oh, there's that as well. But you could still buy them. So that doesn't change that aspect.
Well, you can still buy it in a supermarket. This just covers restaurants.
Right.
And other it also covers, the food, nonprofits even that serve food, although there's an opportunity for waivers on the nonprofit side. But it doesn't, you can still walk into a supermarket, you can buy polystyrene. And also the supermarket itself, like they serve chicken on polystyrene. This is very focused on litter and trying to reduce the amount of polystyrene that gets. If it's littered, it doesn't biodegrade. It gets broken to little pieces. A lot of it goes into the Hudson River, and then some of it may eventually make its way into the ocean.
So it is interesting that in my little town, and Jen, who is a superb reporter, will tell us this, in my little town of Great Barrington, the town meeting, which is the ultimate authority, banned plastic bottles, for example. And then there was an immediate pushback. And there was a special town meeting called to take it back because it caused a certain amount of inconvenience. But some of the great stores in Great Barrington on the main street stuck with it. They said, no, this is the right thing to do. And so it was roundly, the recall was roundly defeated. And Great Barrington stands, as it always does,
great.
As one of the great diamonds in the universe of sensible.
Great Barrington is one of the great diamonds of the universe. Oh, who knew? I didn't realize.
We have a couple of over in the Berkshires. We have a couple of towns that are experimenting. I was just telling with Judith that in Williamstown, for example, they have polystyrene bands. So to the point where you go into a restaurant that offers takeout and you'll see a sign that says, "Don't even bother asking for it because we don't have it here." But I think polystyrene.
But they have a little the same cardboard box everybody uses.
Compostable cardboard.
Actually, you get plastic. I think that raises the bigger question, though, for me, is that we live in such a time of convenience to go and take out, whether it's water bottles. I mean, look at Amazon. How much packaging is involved. If anyone has ever ordered anything online, you get huge amounts of packaging for sometimes buying something the size of a flash drive or something like that. And I think that's part of the bigger problem, too, is when are these, it's great to see this on a local level, but on a more global perspective, when are you going to see some of those things change?
Do you think we'll see a time when newspapers will not allow advertising of plastic products?
I don't know. I have
First Amendment issue.
But I think it is exactly.
But Jen, to your point, I think it'll change when the public gets involved. And the nice thing about these local initiatives is it's user friendly. You can easily show up at a county legislature meeting, hard to travel to Washington or state capitals. And quite honestly, the plastics industry and their allies in the chemical industry are ferocious. At this Albany County legislature meeting the other night, the chemical lobbyists brought 20 people with them from a polystyrene manufacturing facility in Orange County, all dressed in green shirts, holding up signs. And it was a horrible example of exploiting workers. And none of the workers spoke. But they applauded loudly when the chemical lobbyists spoke. And, you know, I spoke to a couple of them, very decent people. We don't want them to lose their jobs, but they're going to go the way of the coal industry. So I said, you know, you need to talk to your management about shifting to more sustainable products, because that is the future.
Because management always wants to hear from the employees about what to change, right?
Well, we do here.
Well, of course, here. This
invited them to show up, you know, at a hearing 2 hours away and wildly applaud when the chemical lobbyists testify. It was a very bizarre vibe.
When you're the truckers who are bringing the Coca-Cola around, and it's served in place. I remember when Bloomberg did his thing, the Teamsters, I think it was the Teamsters and others, were roundly opposed to that because it meant their short-term employment.
But the other thing is, we're not talking about the cost of compliance. For a lot of cafes and restaurants, which are already trying to meet certain state and federal mandates, you know, a lot of them want to be environmentally sustainable. Mm-hmm. But when you look at like plastic, you know, paper straws, for example, the price of paper straws has gone up astronomically, where it's 10 to 20 times the cost of plastic straws. Mm-hmm. So there has to be a point where we're trying to look at this on the side of business as well. How do we get them to be compliant, but also respect the environment?
Well, the answer is no straws.
Right.
People can live without straws. And if you have a disability, there's an exemption. When I go to restaurants, I say no straw, please. And about a third of the wait staff say to me, oh, because of the turtle? You know, because there's this video with a turtle with a plastic straw up their nostril, which is a very disturbing video to watch.
Oh my God.
I'm telling you, a third of the wait staff because of the turtle. And I say, yes, that's definitely part of it. And, you know, you sit in a restaurant, you can drink your beverage without a straw. Right.
I never drink bourbon through a straw anymore. Ever.
Thank you. You might have to get rid of cars.
You are blazing the trail, Ray.
Thank you.
And it saves the business money because they don't have to buy it.
And Judith, we may have to get rid of cars, as every morning when I come over, I go through West Stockbridge, and as you go over you've seen it, Jen, right? You go over the bridge, and it says Turtle Crossing. Mm. Now, I have never seen a turtle on the Turtle Crossing, but there it is.
You're going to see one today.
Maybe because they're all dead.
Yeah. And that's the last straw.
The last straw. By the way, you know what I didn't do at the beginning of this segment? I did not give the email address.
Oh, boy.
And that's my bad. Panel@WAMC.org is the email address. Panel@WAMC.org. We have a few ground rules about the emails, right?
What are they?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Don't send more than one per day. Give us a good reckon, a good thought, and that's it. Keep them brief, to the point, on topic. Don't include links. Alan reads a hard copy, which then we recycle, Judith, of your letter. We cannot click those links on the air. And then don't use abbreviations. Proofread your emails. Make sure it makes sense, for us to read.
You know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Email is panel@WAMC.org. The panel today, boy, we kind of wrapped up this segment. Not enough time to start a new one. The email address is panel@WAMC.org. Joe Bonilla is here. He's a communications consultant. Alan Shartok is here. He does stuff. Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith is here. Former regional administrator of the EPA, Judith Enck, is here. So what's your big story about today, Jen, on the front page?
Oh, it's about we have the OSHA Lifelong Learning Institute, and they decided to do a day dedicated.
That's Ollie?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And they decided to do a day reflecting on the life and times of 1968 and how it compares to modern times. So a lot has changed, like gas prices and the cost of a movie ticket, but a lot has not changed. And from everything from supporting Black lives during sports matches. You had the 1968 Olympics when two runners held their fist ups during the national anthem and then got demedaled. And of course, protests and riots, race riots, have not changed that much since then.
So am I the only person in the room who was alive?
Well, I was four.
I was alive.
Yeah, I was four.
Sorry.
But I mean, what was it
not
like,
Jen
Uncle
and
Alan?
Joe.
No. I was negative.
Well, what was the line?
What was the line?
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
Well, I know the White Album came out that year. That was a good year, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Good year for music.
There's a lot of stuff. The Smithsonian back in the January, February did a special edition. Their headline was The Year That Shattered America. But it's arguable that that could be a headline used just as much today in some people's perspectives.
Speaking of, did you already talk about the new Spike Lee film, The Black Klansman?
I think we mentioned it.
Yeah. fits into Jen's point about how little things have changed. It's an incredible movie.
You saw it?
I did.
Heard it's terrific.
It is amazing. And when it's done, at least at the Spectrum in Albany, everyone just sat. You just couldn't get up and leave. It was I'm not going to say the ending, but it is so powerful. And you sit there thinking about how little things have changed on race issues and, in fact, lately have gotten so much worse.
But don't you think that that's because getting worse? Is that because Trump is truly what we call a reactionary?
Yeah.
I mean, in other words, he delights in taking us back to the point where he calls a black person, a black woman, a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we haven't seen that since Sheriff Clark, to tell you the truth.
All right. We're going to have to break here.
Oh, you have to go now?
Do you mind?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we have to do a couple of minutes of BBC here. This is the roundtable. It's the roundtable panel. We look forward to reading your emails at panel@wamc.org. Joe Bonilla, Judith Enck, Jen Smith, Alan Shartok, and you will be right back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue today. It's the Roundtable panel. 9:34 is the time on your Wednesday morning. Alan Shartok is here, Jen Smith, Judith Enck, and Joe Bonilla. And, of course, you at panel@wamc.org. And before we get to the letters, Joe, you mentioned electric cars in the
yes.
break. I only half caught what you were talking about.
Absolutely. So today, Capital Cars Share, along with Rosenblum Companies, we're announcing that a BMW i3, an all-electric vehicle that can go up to 114 miles, but as a plug-in, will be actually right in Troy for anybody to use.
Oh, cool.
And so it will be our first car that's all-electric, part of our 10-car fleet, the third car in Troy. So hopefully we will convert them all to all-electric.
Now, what's the R in this case? You said R.
Oh, well, I'm on the board for Capital Car Share.
So, you don't just show up and pay and drive. You have to join.
You have to join. It's very affordable memberships, $5 a month, and then pretty much includes any fuel or any use of the car, insurance, everything.
But now, do they put throttle chokes so you can't go faster than the speed limit?
We don't do that.
No.
Because, I mean, you're in a BMW. You might want to test the limits a little bit. I mean, in theory, anyway. Well, that's great.
What a great addition to
Troy.
Troy is really bouncing back. I'm so impressed with Troy. Although I will say it is kind of sad that the Troy Record building is now apartments across from my favorite restaurant in Troy, Nighthawks.
Oh,
Farm to Table.
That's Howard's joint. You know, he's an old WAMCer.
Really?
Yeah,
great restaurant. If you're in Troy, you should go there and then do the electric car share to get home.
Excellent. Outstanding.
That was kind of awkward, but it worked.
It works, right?
Yahoo, electric cars.
The only problem with electric cars is you don't know when they're... If you're a little hard of hearing, say you've been in radio 30 years, you don't know they're on, it's a problem.
People complain about my Prius all the time about that.
I've had the same problem with a Prius.
That's the nice thing about these cars is it reduces noise pollution.
Right.
You live in a city, it is noisy.
Yeah, but on the other hand, if you're standing in the wrong place at the wrong time...
You know a car is coming. Yeah.
Right.
You just have to use your eyes, talk to your people. What if your back is turned? There's no data that electric cars causes safety problems.
Again, the problem with electric cars, aside from the very quietness for those of us in radio, is that you need... They'll really take off when you have the stations like gas stations along the highway, and then you have rapid charge, and then you can keep going. Because Alan, I mean, he lives far away.
I live 50 miles away.
He'd be on the edge of the range of some of
these. Well, California has so many electric car plug-in stations in public places, and New York and Massachusetts need to catch up.
It's also cross-compliance with, obviously, Tesla and other systems as well. So as long as we have a universal system for
So I have a question for all of you, because I don't get it. In my Prius, I think I'm right about this. You have a choice. You can get a hybrid, which also has
a combustion engine
You know, so the idea that if you ran out of electric, you'd still have some gas to go on. That sounds eminently sensible to me. Or you could have, in some cases, another brands, maybe an all-electric thing. Why would you have an all-electric and risk running out of electric when you had the potential for a little fossil fuel?
Have you ever seen a Tesla? They're pretty sharp. Mm-hmm. They're pretty sharp.
What's your point?
Two words, climate change.
Oh, I see. You got to think in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And you have to be well organized and know when to plug in.
Right.
Hannaford's have electric charging stations.
They do.
They're coming to Stewart's. So smart businesses are putting those in. I mean, Hannaford is great. You're in there for a half hour shopping anyway.
Half hour?
I'm fast. I have my list. Don't stand in my way.
How long does these quick chargers take?
It can take as short as an hour or two. Yeah, but
an hour or two? It's about an hour or two.
For overnight. Most people charge at home.
Yeah.
You need a rapid charge technology to really make this thing
happen. And it's progressively getting better over time. And I expect in the near future we'll have 3 minutes to fill up real quick.
That's it, man. Yeah. That's what you're looking at.
People went from the horse and buggy to the car. That was a leap. This one isn't.
Can I complain about one thing?
Yes.
Please, Uncle Grumpy.
When I was a kid in the 70s, I figured by the year 2000 we would have flying cars. And I was counting on that fact. Where the hell are the flying cars? Joe Benia.
Well, I can tell you right now. Here's the thing is that we're getting progressively to a point where, you know, basically the independence that comes along with the automobile will not be the same. You know, we have Uber, we have automated vehicles, we have things like that. So the, you know, that coming of age moment where people would get their driver's license is no longer happening in the same way.
That doesn't answer my question.
Well, I know it doesn't.
Okay. But what do you mean?
Well, you see a lot more younger people not getting their driver's license at 15 or 16 years old. They're waiting until the 18, 19, or maybe never. And that's really part of more of this gig economy where basically they don't need a car.
How can they vote?
It's
a joke. Forget it.
All right. You know what? Let's take some listener email here, Alan. Panel@wamc.org if you want to write in.
Why are you giving me that look?
Why?
I know that look.
You know why? You're full of pain meds, and who knows what you'll say next.
Okay, here we go. Frank says, Cobb on the Capital Connection. Good morning, panel. Thank you, Alan, for having Tetra Cobb on the Congressional Corner yesterday. And by the way, she'll be on again today at 10:50. It was refreshing to actually hear from a potential representative than to hear nothing from our current representative, Stefanik. Flip the 21st, says Frank. But I have to say, Frank, we have invited, of course, Representative Stefanik any number of times. And unlike other people who you never hear from again, she says, yeah, she'll come. She sets a date, and then she doesn't get here. So, you know, she puts it several months down the road. But I met Tetra Cobb, and I'll be honest with you, in the best of ways, I really fell in love with the woman. I thought she was phenomenal.
She's really smart. She has deep roots in the Adirondacks, and she didn't invite Donald Trump to her district. So I think that gets her points.
She doesn't have a district.
Don't you think that would...
Where she's running.
Yeah. Don't you think that might... thank you, Ray. Don't you think that might bite Stefanik in the hiney?
Yes.
If you think about it for a second. Because by the time that election comes around, Trump may be a dirty word.
It was a weird move because she did not even endorse Trump in the primaries or the general election.
And he wasn't any too kind to her either.
Exactly.
Well, he got back at her by calling her Stefanik, if you actually watched the event.
Do you think he did that on purpose?
Nah, I think he just forgot.
Yeah.
Why does he need to learn the name of an accomplished woman in Congress?
Oh, boy.
All right, the email address is panel@wamc.org. And then the next letter says, right, Alan?
Right. Uncle Ray, Uncle Grumpy. Right. Listener in Utah. Okay, I'm going to tell you something right now. I'm going to tell Sarah to put anybody, the further away you are, but don't lie about it.
Okay, that's
so
the
no
thing.
Millhouse from Maui?
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Because people will just say, look, I'm in Guam, here's my letter, I want to be first. That's not going to work.
Not our listeners, right, Judith?
Yeah.
Right. I veto that. As guest host of the program, I veto
that
decision.
Power.
Good. And then Susan says, this question is for Judith. Sit up straight, Judith. This question is for Judith. Since China is no longer taking the recycling from the U.S., I've been reading that some of our recycling is going into landfills. Have you heard of this?
Yes, it's true. Most recyclables are shipped long distances to China, where they recycle it and it comes back as your cardboard boxes and plastic packaging. And China has closed the door to United States recyclables because we shifted to what's called single stream recycling, where everything gets put in one container. And people are putting things like polystyrene in there and many plastics that can't be recycled. So this is a very serious problem. There's not enough domestic markets for this material. So some source-separated recyclables, I'm sorry to say, are not being recycled. There's a town just north of here who didn't tell their residents that they were taking all their recyclables, I think, to the Hudson Falls incinerator, which is the worst place to send plastics, for instance. So this is a problem, and the reason why a polystyrene ban and fees on plastic bags makes a lot of sense. We can't recycle our way out of the plastic pollution problem.
I'm sorry, Judith, but isn't there a political aspect to this, too? Trump has started up with China, and China is thumbing its nose at us and saying, okay, if that's what you're going to do, then we're going to give you a hard time on other things.
Yeah, you may be right.
Yeah. Okay, and Chris says, recycling. If people would put their Amazon boxes in the green bins, there wouldn't be a problem.
Well, there's a lot of Amazon boxes. I'm a huge booster of recycling, but we have to do waste reduction and reuse if we've got a chance
I think that goes back again to what we were talking about before about consumer decision making too, and what you choose to buy and how often you choose to use things.
Right.
And Jerry from Gilderland, that's a long way off, right?
That's very far.
He said, on the environment, if you don't see the relationship between plastic shoppings and styrofoam to the plastic floating in the ocean and elsewhere, then you're not paying attention.
Correct.
Yep.
And that is the problem, of course. A lot of people aren't paying any attention whatsoever, except in our town of Great Barrington, where we really care about
it. The diamond of the universe, you mean?
Yeah. What?
The diamond of the universe?
Yeah. That's the
great
one.
The shining jewel of the universe.
Gary says straws. So while I agree with Judith about not using straws, it is difficult if you stop and get a drink to go. The tops on takeout cold drink cups only have a place for a straw. There's no place where you can just sip, like in the coffee cups, I guess, without taking the top off, which is hard to do while driving. They need to redesign cold drink cups.
Mm.
They can redesign it, but while we're waiting, what I do is I just don't fill it all the way to the top, and you can manage even in a car.
Well, that's all right for you because you have a lot of money, but there are people who want their value.
No, I don't have a lot of money. I bring my reusable cup with me, and I say, don't fill it to the top.
You could use a wooden straw, right? A very thin reed. Bring it with you wherever you go.
There are reusable straws.
Idea, right? Sure. Well, yeah. Thank you.
I deny it's the meds. Okay.
Wait a minute.
Straws says Jules.
How about this wonderful WMC?
The old bamboo.
Yeah, bamboo. Oh, I carry this with me everywhere.
That was your premium, in other words.
Yeah,
look
I don't.
Look at that.
I don't.
Because we are on the radio.
Next
here.
Version. Yep. Sorry, we're on the radio.
So
I'm
it's
describing
a knife and fork and spoon, all made out of lovely
chopsticks.
Bamboo,
so
chopsticks.
I would say add a straw next time.
Ah, okay.
I take this with me everywhere I go.
Now, how do you
wash them?
I go to the sink and wash them. It's very simple.
Okay, we're on the same page, Alan. We both have the same question. How do you clean them? All right, we have to take a break here.
or don't clean them. I don't care. You don't die from
that
a little
so
bit.
That is so condescending. Judith Henk is here. Joe Bonilla, Alan
Chartok,
Jen Smith. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. The panel is in full swing here. We have, it's almost over. Former Regional Administrator, Environmental Protection Agency, Judith Henk is here. Communications Consultant, Joe Bonilla. We also have Berkshire Eagle reporter, Jen Smith, and you at home. Panel at WAMC.org is the email address.
I saw what you did there.
What?
And
WAMC's Alan Chartok.
I saw what you did there.
He's the anchor of the panel. He is the last one in the line as we play tug of war here with today's events. Trump's picks, Democratic diversity among primary winners. Democrats embraced diversity Tuesday in a primary night of firsts. Democrats rallied behind the nation's first transgender nominee for governor. Christine Hallquist won the Democratic nomination. The former chief executive of Vermont Electric Cooperative bested a field of four Democrats that included a 14-year-old.
And she really killed them, by the way. Mm-hmm. I mean, she got 40% of the vote, and the other five got much, you know, in the teens.
Because she is a very capable, well-qualified candidate who happens to be transgender.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's the thing, though. Her platform, like we've seen these other kind of successful upturns,
right,
really stuck to the issues. And even in her speech last night, you saw that she mentioned briefly that she hopes she's not the only transgender candidate that will be forthcoming, to be represented at the table, but that she looked at the governor's economic vision and said that he didn't really have a long-term economic vision. She also ran on broadband, which is a huge issue.
Right.
I mean, in the Berkshires, we know that whoever solves the broadband issue for Berkshire County
will
be a hero for life.
You don't want to drive through Stockbridge, that's for sure.
But again, it's these kitchen table, everyday life, improving that kind of quality of...
And she's the she's the former head of a public utility, so
right.
She's
well
positioned to solve the broadband problem.
And
she's really good on climate change.
She's very good.
Well, Hallquist faces a difficult path.
Yes.
Governor Scott is very popular.
One term.
Well, very, very popular among maybe among Democrats more so than Republicans in Vermont.
Yeah.
But not among gun owners, that's for sure, because they think that he reversed himself.
Right.
So,
just as a side question, how is it possible to run for governor if you're not even old enough to vote?
Because in Vermont, I heard this on your station,
because of law.
On our station.
There's
cut
no
it out.
Specific law.
There's no age restriction. And this teenager who ran was so articulate. He was running on the gun control issue and talked about how harrowing it is when you're in school and you hear a loud noise and you instantly think there may be an intruder with a gun. He got 8% of the vote.
Yeah, 4,600 votes is nothing to blink at.
Yeah, good for him.
It's kind of weird, though. I mean, you're running for office and you can't even vote for yourself.
Yeah, that's the point.
But his dad voted for him.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's great. Well, probably some sort of extra credit in school for this, right?
You would hope.
And his campaign manager was a fellow high school or school classmate.
What a good
watch
experience
out in 2 years,
for that. Right?
You can run for class president or you can run for governor.
There you go.
Democrats in Minnesota backed a national party leader who is facing accusations of domestic violence.
Big win.
A big win, but he has denied the allegations. We're talking about Keith Ellison, who is the deputy chairman of the Democratic National Committee. He got his nomination to become the state's attorney general. That's after the candidacy was rocked by allegations over the weekend about domestic violence amid the Me Too movement and everything else. Mm-hmm. Still won handily. What can we make of that, political scientist?
Political scientist, what we can make of it is that news tends to trickle out slowly. It was a last-minute thing, as you say. There is a question now whether we are reaching that point where people say, prove it before you say it, and that there's a certain credibility issue. The kid of the alleged victim says he saw the man pulling his mother out of the bed.
You saw
by
a video.
A video of the mother pulling the guy out of the woman out of the bed by the ankles, it apparently just didn't matter this time. Although, with people in nearby political provinces, it has mattered.
Well, he won handily with 51%, but the DNC is investigating, and I think they need a little bit of time to see is this a true charge or is this not, or is it somewhere in between? I think we take all of these charges seriously, but I think the voters in Minnesota were skeptical, especially it came out pretty late and the alleged victim never produced the tape, the videotape, which is apparently the only evidence, although the woman says that it happened.
And I think that was another element too that came up with from her perspective is just like, that was a pretty degrading video, and why should a victim have to provide some sort of evidence to be believed. So I think that's another element that's come out in this case. But I think, again, the timing, I think, may have been an element in terms of what the voting polls produced. Although, again, he was a very strong contender going into it.
And at the same time, we're talking about this, of course, the other big story. I'm probably jumping ahead, right?
Sure, I'm sure you are.
Yeah, is the Catholic Church this morning and the Pennsylvania finding. It's this extraordinary story.
Yeah. Before I move on, though, I just wanted to mention the race itself. So Ellison left the seat to run for attorney general, and then you have the contenders for his seat in the 5th congressional district there. And I think that's a pretty amazing story in itself. First of all, I think almost all the candidates, both on the Republican and Democratic side, are women, which was pretty neat. But the one who came out of the primary last night, Ilhan Omar, is slated to be the first Somali-American person in Congress, also a refugee. Who just has an incredible backstory and just really took away the vote on that one, and is running against someone who's quite opposite, Jennifer Zielinski. And I think that is something also is interesting to watch as we hear these narratives between Vermont's now gubernatorial candidate, stories like this, is to, from a media standpoint, looking at the narratives, and we don't want to see minorities as a novelty. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things I learned from just looking around at that congressional district race was that there's tons of stuff on Omar, but very little on Zielinski. The AP story itself actually only had one graph on her winning a three-way primary. And that, to me, was a little bit disturbing. And I think, again, when we look back at our last presidential election about equal time to candidates and not just looking at them as outstanding or outliers or a fantastic story, we really need to be more careful about how we're covering these issues so that voters can have enough time and enough information to make fair votes.
To vote on issues and not strictly identity.
Yes.
Our email address is panel@wamc.org. Alan, we have a couple of minutes here before the news break. Why don't we take care of some letters, sir?
Okay, and we're going to have to respond as quickly as we can.
All right. Okay.
Marianne says, Judith, how can we tell what is polystyrene if, as you say, it comes marked as recyclable? Any clear plastic container?
It's typically has the number 6 and the chasing arrows on the bottom, and you can tell by the feel. It's brittle, and when in doubt, just don't get it.
Right.
Okay. And Janet says, Prius hybrids generate their own electricity and do not use electricity which needs to be generated using other means. And that's from Janet in Smithburg,
Maryland.
Doesn't the
combustion engine charge the battery?
Yeah, it does. Yes,
that's
true.
And you have
there are two versions out there. There's the hybrid and there's the plug-in electric.
Right.
So I think there's
And you
confusion.
Can actually, when you have, I still haven't learned how to get all the displays, but if you get one particular display, it will show you how much electricity is being generated by your hybrid.
Yeah.
Right.
The first-year Prius had that. And then the real pros, you get into a driving pattern that makes more
electricity. Right?
Yeah, people have contests about
strategy.
This.
Strategy.
Yeah. Do you do that, Alan?
Well, all I know is that
you're
my car this
mileage.
Morning, coming down from the Berkshires, got 65 miles
per hour. Wow. Now, do you have enough electricity to plug your hair dryer in as you're driving to work?
Sure. Cool. And I have hair.
Okay. So what are you trying to say, hat man?
Okay, so that's right. So that was Janet. And Sean says, another reason for going all electric is electric cars are substantially less maintenance, no drivetrain, no oil changes, so many less moving parts, so many less things to break down. And that's from Sean. And then from John, dear panel.
Yes.
I recently listened to a clip from Bill McKibben, who advised to stop using the phrase climate change and start using the phrase climate crisis, as it more accurately reflects what the future holds. And then we heard from Carrie, who said, slight disability in electric cars. The statement, use your eyes, discounts all those that have a seeing disability.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Or those looking at their phones as they're on the crosswalk.
Yeah. Excellent point.
So many. So maybe there needs to be a little built-in noise for electric
cars. Some do. I can't tell you the specific model, but some actually have like a mimicked noise for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And then Tom says, bottled water. It struck me recently that every time I see a photo of U.S. and or world leaders at meetings, they always have water in plastic containers in front of them. Is industry engaged in product placement? Free bottled water to the White House, considering world leader status? I'm sure the stuff is available to promote water in pitchers and send a powerful message about abusive plastic.
I thought it was Jen.
And Megan says, straws. This is just a quick note about the straws. Plastic straws definitely need to be taken out of circulation. But those of us who like to use straws, there's a collapsible metal straw that fits in a little box
you
can put on your keychain. I've been meaning to buy one.
Oh, my God. Judith has one of those as well.
Well, it sounds like a thing that we could give away as
thingy. Yes.
Always thinking.
You could use it as an antenna to pick up the station.
Well, that's the one bad thing about metal straws for restaurants is that people will throw them away. Yeah. And they're incredibly expensive.
Titanium. Yeah.
Well, there's glass straws. There's
glass
metal straws. Bring
your own straw.
They're bamboo straws. Those are a little bit more expensive. And there's no straw.
All very interesting. But let's take a break here for news. Judith Enck is here, and Jen Smith, and Joe Bonilla, and Alan Shartok. The email address is panel@wamc.org. We'll break for news, and we'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's a Wednesday morning. Something funny over there, Judith?
No.
It was Jen Smith laughing. All right.
Well, I'm not getting Jen in trouble. All right.
Teacher Jen was the bad
solidarity.
One.
It's 7 minutes after 10 o'clock. The Roundtable panel today, Judith Enck, Joe Bonilla, Jen Smith, and Alan Shartok. You can join the fun by emailing us at panel@wamc.org. And I guess there are some more letters.
There are.
All right.
Here's a one. It says Alan. A-L-L-E-N. I mean, I don't mind being insulted, but that's bad.
You're like Marty Allen.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Alan, wake up. If you can run out of charge, you can run out of gas. And 11 exclamation marks. What?
I think of course that's true, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, you're in the car with the charge, but if the charge runs out after 100 miles or so.
But you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you pay attention to it.
His point, of course,
is if you have gas and you go too far, then you run out of gas as well. I think it's valid.
And David says, in 1970, I produced a student film pointing out excess packaging in a grocery market using on many products. It's gotten worse instead of better, but one hopes that a reduction in the practice and many alternatives, including recycled materials, will become the norm. By the way, in those days, most straws were still made out of biodegradable paper. They work just fine. I never drink beer or bourbon through straws.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Julia says, I don't need a straw in my restaurant beverage glass, but consuming a thick milkshake from the local ice cream store is another matter.
Okay, Judith, how do you answer that question? The whole milkshake shake dilemma.
Yeah.
What do you do?
No cover, just sip it. You can do it. Man up.
Okay, and Andy says, Hallquist in Vermont Democratic primary, Hallquist, didn't have any competition. I wish her well and hope she continues to make a difference in Vermont, but she is going to lose. The lieutenant governor seems an easy beat, and I think she picked the wrong race for a political beginner. Hey, no, Joe Bonilla, you're the expert in this stuff, but for a political beginner,
she's doing exactly what she needs to do.
So of course, she gets her name out there, and then the next time, if she loses, because this is Vermont.
Well, it's also a 2-year term, too. I mean, if she comes up short this time, then, wait another 2 years.
Pundit said the same thing about Barack Obama the first time he ran for
president. And Donald Trump, for that matter, right?
Yeah. And
Kevin says, Chris Kobach winning the primary in Kansas is very bad. He's a champion for suppressing voting rights and making it harder for people to vote. If you listen to our excellent political analyst at 7:45 this morning.
Oh, good Lord. That's you.
Yeah, yeah. What he said was, it's actually good for the Democrats.
Yeah, he's right. Whoever he is, your analyst at 7:45.
That's me.
That's
I know.
The whole idea is you pick the guy who's more towards the wacko side, and then when the independents and Democrats vote, you got a better chance.
Well, there was a poll recently that showed that the Democrat will beat Kris Kobach, and the Democrat would not have beaten the incumbent Republican governor.
Right. Today, but, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, we heard the same thing with Trump. Like, a lot of Democrats were saying, and including Hillary Clinton, said, I want Trump to win the Republican primary. You know, he's so wacky, we'll beat him, and look at the crisis we're in. So I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah, well, it's Kansas, after all, so it's going to be...
They've elected Democrats.
Yes, they have.
Wasn't Kathleen Sebelius the governor of Kansas?
So anyway, Cheryl says evidence. One of your panelists said in reference to your news on video of Keith Ellison's domestic violence, why should a victim have to produce the evidence to be believed? I am not anti-victim, but how do we know a woman is a victim if we don't have any evidence? And that's from Cheryl in Hobart.
That's what investigations are for.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and N says, what Jen said was so important. Oh, it's Aaron. I'm so sorry. I read badly here for change. The Democratic Party needs to be more than just identity politics. I vote for people because of their policies. Maybe Republicans don't vote for people because of the color of their skin or sexuality. But if that's all the documents I have to offer, is not Trump an identity politics without policy? They will continue to lose seats and be in the minority nationwide. And that's from Aaron.
Thank you very much. The email address here is panel@wamc.org. Closing arguments expected today in the trial of Paul Manafort, former Trump campaign chairman accused of tax evasion and bank fraud. Seems like it has been a long trial in the news every day. Manafort's defense rested its case yesterday without calling any witnesses. Manafort himself chose not to testify. The defense says the government hasn't met its burden of proof. They tried to get the case dismissed on those grounds. Judge Ellis said, no way. Now, this could go to the jury as soon as today.
Right.
How interesting that the defense put up no witnesses.
Well, they couldn't.
Including Manafort. Right. And the judge, I know you have concerns about the judge, Alan. The judge invited Manafort to the bench and said, it's your right to testify. It's your right not to testify. Mm-hmm. If you choose not to testify, I'll instruct the jury that that doesn't matter. But my goodness, that you're paying a lot of high-priced lawyers and they don't call one witness call Manafort. And I don't think it bodes well.
Well, the issue is that if Manafort actually testified, what is he going to do? Plead the fifth every single time?
Right. Yeah. He couldn't.
And wait till the second trial comes. The real question for
what
the
second
panel.
Trial?
In Washington next month.
He has another trial.
Oh, coming. I see.
Okay, so now we as a panel have a God-given responsibility to decide whether or not Trump is going to pardon Manafort.
Let's see if he's guilty first.
Well, you can pardon in advance. Ford did with Nixon.
But he's up on 18 counts. I don't think the jury is going to deliberate very long. And then, as Alan mentioned, there's a second trial coming up.
And there's what we call jury nullification. All it takes is one person sitting on that thing to say, everybody was guilty. Gates was guilty, and all the people, the accountant was guilty, and they're all pleading, and you're taking this poor schnook and you're making him, the object of all of this. Now, I don't believe that, and I believe that's why you have a prosecution and why they offered these deals, because you get the guy at the top. But I truly believe, if it really comes down to it, that Trump is going to pardon Manafort.
I'm not totally convinced of that. I think the only reason I feel that is that he might want to keep some distance away from Manafort.
And I think he has been.
Right. So I wouldn't really bank on the pardon. Do I think it's certainly within scope, like what he's done for Joe Arpaio? Certainly. But
Manafort is certainly seems to be counting on it. Yeah. Right. Seems to be counting
right.
on it.
Yeah, he does. I think it all depends on what's good for Trump on that particular day.
Yeah.
If he thinks it benefits him personally or his family, he may offer a pardon. But if his handlers say this hurts you more than helps you, he won't. It's all every decision that I can't believe I'm about to say this sentence. Every decision the President of the United States makes is based on his own personal self-interest.
Yeah, but it's his self-interest that Manafort not flip.
Yeah.
We can't be outraged about the President pardoning Manafort when Manafort has not even been found guilty yet.
Right.
And interestingly, Judith, you said you think it'll be a fast jury deliberation.
Yes.
I'm wondering what will come out and what will be said. So I think each side has 2 hours. The judge put the limit on for closing arguments.
And then said, don't use your 2 hours.
Yeah. And but, you know, will they, won't they? I think, you know, Politico had an interesting analysis of, you know, who wasn't in the room. So we heard about the Chicago accounting, but we did not hear, like, from them in person. You look at, you know, who the prosecution gave immunity in terms of offering the statements.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that'll be looked at, too. I mean, I think if I were a juror, I'd question all of those things. So I think it might be a little bit longer of a deliberation. But I think the judge will kind of encourage, as he's consistently done throughout this trial, you know, not to drag.
Yeah, but I have to say, as I've said all along, it only takes one.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that means it could be a long, drawn out process.
Yeah, it could.
And would you say that if it is, in fact, if the deliberations go into day two or three, that makes the chances that Manafort walks on this higher?
Yes, I think that's the case. But I also think that many juries have returned guilty verdicts after a couple of days.
Right.
Yeah, you really can't read into how long they're, you know, it's a tax fraud case, it's multiple bank frauds. This is largely a paper case. Mm-hmm. And if Manafort wasn't working, if he wasn't affiliated with Trump, it would be fairly straightforward here.
Right.
But I think the prosecution really made their case.
Yeah.
And I will be corrected, but in my mind, this is pretty solid. Maybe they won't convict on all 18 counts, but they'll convict on
a lot
on
of
a
counts.
Lot.
In
yeah.
Room. Right.
I don't know if you guys saw this out of New Mexico. New Mexico state officials say a judge has received threats of violence after a ruling that allows the release of 5 defendants accused of child abuse in connection with a raid on a compound, ramshackle compound, near the Colorado state line. Judge Sarah Backus has come under attack through social media, emails, and phone calls in response to a pretrial ruling that allows the release of 2 men and 3 women. New Mexico's governor, Susana Martinez, other state Republicans criticizing this decision. You see this news, Alan?
I know about the story, but I don't think I would be.
I think the judge's decision was based on some new bail laws, if I read correctly, about New Mexico, but I'm not too well-versed on.
The judge set a $20,000 bond for each defendant, ordered them to wear ankle monitors when released. They're forbidden to hold firearms. It's an interesting. I mean, the prosecutor said this extended family had been training for an armed anti-government mission. Isn't that enough to say, well, you better stay until trial?
You would hope it would be.
But I think the controversy, too, around this case was the original kind of like misspeaking of the
intent.
Yeah. You know, immediately labeling them as a terrorist. So I wonder if they're, you know, kind of treading on eggshells.
There was a
with
dead
this,
kid
think,
on the compound.
Yeah.
There were weapons everywhere.
I'm not denying those facts, but I think I wonder if this is coming into play with the judge's decision too, between that and the New Mexico's new laws.
I find it interesting. I mean, you juxtapose.
It's definitely eyebrow raising, without a doubt.
Manafort's been in solitary confinement.
Right.
I mean, and that's a financial crime,
right?
Right.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the things I would love to keep talking about, though, we talked about it a little bit earlier. We mentioned it was the Pennsylvania case.
Yeah, hundreds of Roman Catholic priests in Pennsylvania molested more than 1,000 children, maybe more, since the 1940s. It was a report that was years in the making. A grand jury probe was the most extensive investigation of Catholic clergy abuse by any state. Mm-hmm. In nearly all of the cases, the statute of limitations has run out, meaning that criminal charges cannot be filed. More than 100 priests are dead. Many others retired or have been dismissed. Frankly, it's a pretty disgusting thing to read, this whole thing.
If you read any of the details, and I said this on Twitter yesterday, but the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette has done an excellent job reporting out this story, including documents. I mean, anything you want to know about this case, you can find in their reporting. And I think it's really interesting to read the grand jury's recommendations on this case. You know, they just criticize the whole institution for being negligent, and how the cardinal and the bishops involved could deny which they are, you know, knowing that there was any cover up when there's clear evidence that, you know, these priests were shifted, relocated. There's, you know, outstanding testimony from victims. You know, it's just a really obvious case. And I think someone from the Boston Globe Spotlight team also had tweeted out last night, you know, when we uncovered our case in Massachusetts, it wasn't exclusive to Massachusetts. This is happening everywhere. You know, I can't imagine there's a, I can't think of the Cardinal's last name right now, but there's a high school named after him, a Catholic high school named after this guy. And imagine, like, just, I don't know. I think it's just, it calls for a real strict lens at, you know, we say separation of church and state, but I think when there's just this
gross abuse and
absolutely. Yeah.
But I mean, the bigger part of it, I mean, this has been a huge year that's rocked the Catholic Church in the United States. You've had obviously what happened in Pennsylvania. You had obviously all the issues with, you know, Cardinal McCarrick in D.C. And so, you know, when will enough be enough, really?
Well, I think a lot of that depends not just on practicing Catholics, but also law enforcement.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I don't expect the Catholic Church to fix this. The Bishop of Pittsburgh, David Zubik, said yesterday there was no cover-up, which is really hard to imagine. And the reality is, and what I think is important in this report, which was initiated by the Attorney General of Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro. And I think we need more state-level attorney generals and grand juries looking at this. But, you know, they used very clear language. They said little boys and girls were raped by priests and clergy. And
they gave out gold necklaces to identify who the potential next victims were for everybody else. It was a club.
And you know, Jen, you mentioned the Spotlight series. That was in 2002. Mm-hmm. And here we are years later. And I don't think this is an isolation, but you have to hold these individuals accountable by changing the statute of limitations.
Well,
and the church opposes.
That's what the grand jury had sort of stated, too, is, you know, and it's, you know, this is this sunshine that is put on this report is their greatest defense right now because of the statute limitations, you know, and other shield laws. And that goes not just for the Catholic Church, but look at sexual assault allegations and cases on college campuses. A lot of them go to a college tribunal, essentially, versus, you know, being handled by local law enforcement. And I think that's really what the lens needs to be on and what needs to be something that needs to be driven.
I'm sorry, Joe, but the window has to be closed.
Right.
I mean, that's what this is really all about. The lower house in Pennsylvania made it clear that they were ready to close the window and say, you report it just like a murder never goes away.
Right. You know, no statute limitations on murders. But will the Pennsylvania legislature change the
Apparently
statute
not
limitations?
The Senate. They have no stomach for it.
What's interesting, though, is that, you know, even recently you had the Bishop of Albany actually calling for a commission of lay Catholics to look into brother bishops, which is kind of interesting that, you know, why now?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we have one bishop. You know, obviously, the Diocese of Albany covers 18 counties, but you haven't heard of any other, you know, American cardinal calling for anything like that.
Mm-hmm. And this morning, they asked the Vatican for comment on this grand jury report, and the Vatican actually said no comment.
Huh. So what do you do if you're the Pope now?
Oh, I think there's a lot this Pope can do, including making sure that the existing roster of priests are not continuing to sexually abuse young people and seminarians and others. I think this needs outside, independent, careful review, and you hold the people who have proven to be sexual assaulters, you hold them accountable, but there has to be institutional change. This whole notion that they knew people were abusing children and they moved them around to other parishes is unbelievable.
The problem is it's an institution of this size, this caliber, and there's no transparency. And even when you look at some of the documents that were released after the grand jury report came out, some of them are still redacted. There are still names we don't know. You hear the cardinal saying, you know, oh, we're going to set up this new website. website. We're going to publish some names, some that were, you know, were redacted from the report. But what good is that now?
All right. We need to wrap it up here. Alan, we have time for maybe a letter or two, and then we'll be done here on the roundtable. I'm sorry. Are we interrupting anything?
No, I'm reading my phone just like I do in my restaurant when I'm in the restaurant. Okay.
We have about a minute here.
So let's see here. So Deb says, the Washington Post has a good article today about Manafort not testifying that everyone should read. I assume that Manafort will be pardoned unless they bring state charges. However, if he's found guilty, will he lose his law license? I had no idea.
That's the least of his troubles.
Yeah. Yeah. This guy's going to jail for a long time.
Yeah. Who would hire Manafort as a
Doug
lawyer?
Doug says, Manafort. Love the show. Re-Manafort. Isn't it possible or likely that his defense rested without presenting evidence or witnesses because, A, he didn't want to introduce anything that might incriminate Trump, and, B, he's banking on a pardon. Yes, indeed.
All right.
Okay, there you go.
Well, thanks very much for your letters today. We appreciate it. Thanks to the panel today. We have Joe Bonilla to thank. Thank
yeah,
you, Joe.
As always.
And we have Judith Eng to thank.
Yeah,
thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Judith, I should thank say. You. And thank you to Jen Smith. Thank you, Jen.
Thank you.
And Alan, thank you as well.
Well, you sound like you're a little reserved.
No.
About my thank you.
I think that my thanks to you, they're implicit, right?
Heartfelt.
Exactly. We'll take a break and then, some great stuff ahead on the roundtable. Stand by.